come off. So my last name is Scarpinato, so the hands are going to wave, just so you know. I grew up here. I'm from Glendale, so 43rd Avenue and Peoria area, and I moved here when I was 2. I'm going to be 50 this month, so you can all do the math on how long I've been here. Before I start our story, though, I would like to share with you, if you have the opportunity to go to Family Promise, please go. Please. The man who runs it, his name is Ted Taylor. He's a friend of mine, and I met him through a strange God kind of moment with the Rotary Club, believe it or not. So again, God bless Google, the Rotary Club, whatever, however he chooses to use the folks and groups. That's been interesting to us to see happen. But he runs a fabulous facility, and you're going to be very blessed by being there and also very moved, I think, to dig deeper into the community. If that's what God's calling you to, that's a great place to do it. So please take the opportunity if you can. So again, I grew up in Glendale, lived here most of my life. Not a big fan of hot summer. I don't know if you are, but I'm not. But 12 years ago, God gave me the opportunity to see our city in a new light and to fall in love with people that I really hadn't ever thought about, in all honesty. 12 years ago, our daughter was 12. My daughter's name is Taylor, and my husband and I thought that she needed to learn how to be a good citizen and a good Samaritan. So along with going to church and participating there, we thought we needed to introduce her to nonprofit opportunities so that she could volunteer. So Phoenix Rescue Mission, we snuck her in a few times for that. But other than that, there really just weren't a lot of places that she could volunteer because she wasn't 16 years old. That's a big issue with our nonprofit world in Phoenix or in the Maricopa County area. So we felt like God was calling us. We said, you know, we feel like we have something to offer, not just on a once every couple months kind of basis. So we said, there has to be somebody somewhere that needs our help. So we started to pray to see if God could reveal that to us. We knew he could. And then just to educate ourselves on what was going on in the community. So on September 3rd of 2006, we invited some people over to our house. And I should tell you, my husband is a chef. So I am not the chef. No, I am the dishwasher. And because I get to eat the food, I wash the dishes happily, joyfully. It's good for me. It's a great trade-off to eat his food just to wash dishes. So we had some people over to our house. That's kind of our thing because he cooks. So it was a husband, wife, and daughter. And the man had just become the charter school principal in the neighborhood I grew up in Glendale. So it was kind of a big deal. And all day long as we were getting ready, I thought, you know, I've just got to ask him about this, the neighborhood, the school, how it's going, because I haven't been back. I moved away right out of high school, and I just haven't been paying attention. So when there was finally a lull in the conversation at dinner, I said, Dennis, how's your school year going? It was only September, so it was pretty early in, right? We're about a month in, maybe. And I expected him to say, you know, talk about attendance, test scores, kids' behaviors, parents being difficult, whatever it is that was on his mind kind of thing. Not at all what he did. He looked down at his dinner plate, he pushed it away, and he just sat there and started to cry. Tears just rolled down his face. And he was a big guy, so it was very obvious that he was moved. And so once I gave him a few minutes to compose himself, he said, you know, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to react that way. He said, I was just in the school cafeteria talking to a teacher during lunch one day, and I saw something that really grieved my heart, and I'm not over it yet, obviously, because I cried. He said, most of the kids were leaving during that time. They were throwing their stuff away and leaving the cafeteria. And he said, when you're in a room like that and there's a lot of kids, the flow of traffic, all of them that are going that certain way, that's probably what they're supposed to be doing. But the ones that aren't doing that, they're the ones you have to keep your eye on because you don't know what they're up to. So he said, if you could just picture, it's the cafeteria. I'm talking to a teacher. Most kids are throwing their stuff away and leaving. And this one girl was not. She was trying to cut through that crowd of kids leaving and walk further into the cafeteria. So he said, I just had to keep my eye on her to find out what she was up to. And he said, I watched her. She walked right up to a big black trash can. She reached in. And he said, I was across the room, and I could see that she picked out a piece of pizza from the trash, and it had a bite mark from someone else. So someone else's teeth marks were in that pizza. And she looked at it. She wrapped it in a napkin. She put it in her pocket. And he watched her do it with several more items until her pockets were full. And then she left. He said he had to go to his office and cry because he was just overwhelmed by the fact that a student in his school was pulling trash, food out of the trash to eat. And so then he went and found her, and he pulled her aside and said, hey, you know, I saw you in the cafeteria. And she said, oh, I'm really sorry. And she immediately started to take the food out of her pocket and said, I thought no one wanted it. I wasn't trying to steal. And he said, that's not why we're here talking, honey. So basically, he found out that she was a refugee. This was 12 years ago. So we were settling a lot of kids from Sudan. So she was from Sudan, and she had a brother and sister. So their income was low enough that the three children qualified for breakfast and lunch at school through the federally funded program, but they didn't really have a consistent source of food on weekends. So as a second grader, she thought that she could take that food need on and solve it for her family by collecting food out of the trash and taking it home for the weekends. So I see some mom faces, that's what I call it, because that's, I'm sure, how my face was that day when my friend told me that. I just thought, how would I feel if I was a mom that couldn't provide for her child just food? I would be heartbroken and so many other things. So when our friends left that night, I was doing the dishes. Remember, I got to eat, so do the dishes. And my husband did some research on the internet, and I forgot to tell you, I am married to an Italian from the East Coast. So pray for me, number one. He's a really good guy. We work together every single day. And so he has a heart for the poor and always has. So that night, he jumped on the internet and he did some research. And if you think back to 12 years ago, we really weren't talking a lot about childhood hunger, and we weren't even talking about hunger in America. So we've come a long way. I'm really grateful for that. But if you could just picture back to then, it was pretty hard to find. He had to spend a couple hours searching. And he finally said to me, all right, we have a hunger problem in our city. I think we should start a nonprofit to help these kids. I think we should call it Kitchen on the Street. And I think we should start tonight. How about you? That's what I thought. Like, you're crazy. And he is. But we did. So we literally started it out of our house. We formed the nonprofit that night through LegalZoom. So we were like on our way. So then we had to start educating ourselves, and it takes time for your paperwork to go through, kind of thing. So I did research and just found that there were a few on the East Coast and the West Coast, a few larger either churches or food banks that were doing food backpacks for kids. So we figured out that instead of trying to reinvent the wheel and how do we find these kids, let's partner with schools. So as an organization, we partner with schools. We have an application online that any school can sign up for our services. I would say the closest one to your church is 19th Avenue and Camelback, the Imagine Charter School. We serve about 100 kids every weekend with a food backpack in that school. We have 30 partner schools around the valley, and we have 2,000 students enrolled in our program. So we run with the school year, so it starts in August. Most of our schools offer summer school through June, so we're able to serve most of those students through that time. So we're really only talking about the July time and a couple weeks, if that, in August when we're not able to give them a backpack. But we try to promote the Summer Food Service Program, which is a federally funded breakfast and lunch opportunity for them. So that night, we jumped on board, started to educate ourselves. We created what we call a bag of hope. It looks like this. It has meals and snacks in it. And mostly they're individually portioned, and they eat them as they are. If a child has access to a microwave, then they can certainly use it, but they don't necessarily have to. What we found then in doing research was that these kids were on their own for the most part, living in some difficult circumstances. Some were just living in low income. Some it was neglect. I don't have to tell you that we have an epidemic of drug use in this country, and therefore we have a lot of children in need and a lot of grand families, because grandparents are now raising kids because the parent can't or won't, unfortunately. So there's a lot of reasons behind the hunger, but to move forward toward today, we did some research and found that a lot of our families now have either an older sibling at home or a guardian of some kind that can prepare a meal. So we've moved more to including one family meal in each one of our bags, so that we are trying to promote the family dinner table. And I have some flyers I'd like to share with you. What we found is that when a child sits down to dinner with their family, their small children, their vocabulary increases by 1,000 words, as opposed to, if you read a child a book, 143 words. So a very significant difference. And most all children that sit down with their family, their grade point averages increase, and their substance abuse rates decrease. So certainly great benefits. I'm pretty sure I grew up in the church. We had dinner. We talked about what we were going to do that week. I did that with my daughter when we had volunteer opportunities. The week before, we discussed it. We, you know, tried to educate ourselves. I think a lot of good things come from the dinner table. So we have a hashtag. We're asking everybody to just snap a photo of your family at dinner, post it there, be encouragement to someone else. You don't have to be someone that we serve to necessarily do that. We'd just like to kind of reach this city and bring families back to the table because there's so many different benefits. So that's kind of the idea behind our family meal, is it helps bring those folks back to the table. So we, in addition to family, bags of hope, we have family food pantries on school campuses. That's regular non-perishable foods that you and I might buy. And we found that the school is the hub of the community. Even if people don't have a child in school, it's a safe place to go with many resources. So it's a great place for us to partner with our schools. And if they have the room, we try to make it possible to supply them with food throughout the course of the year. We ask them to partner with other organizations around them too, because it's not possible for us to be the only source, but it is a good way to reach them and alleviate that issue. As you were mentioning before, most of these folks are short-term folks in need. They don't necessarily stay with us forever. I read a book by Ruby Payne, and it's all about, okay, we know about Ruby Payne, right on. Okay, so probably one of the biggest things I got out of that book is Ruby says that people in poverty don't necessarily need money. What they really need is resources. And so what you were talking about earlier, about having the eyes of Christ to see people in a situation, maybe just walking down the street pushing a baby stroller. After I read When Helping Hurts, I don't know if you've ever heard about that book, but it's excellent. And once I read that book, my heart was changed. And when I drive the streets nowadays, I look at things so much differently than I did before. And meaning, first and foremost, I pray for those folks, if they don't know Christ, that they would know him, that in some way he would put someone in their path to plant that seed for them. But then also not judging. We're all in different situations for different reasons and for different causes. And a lot of times there is a reason behind that poverty. For 7.5 years, we partnered with St. Mary's Food Bank, and once a month we did a food distribution. I'm not sure if you all know about Palomino School in the 32nd Street area. Okay, the square. The square, yes, the highest crime rate in our city about 25 years ago. And so, of course, my New Jersey husband, we're going to do it. Let's do it there, right? Couldn't be a safe neighborhood. No, I'm kidding. It was a great thing. But over those 7.5 years, we really developed friendships with these people, because you saw them once a month, and they would be sometimes in great shape and sometimes not in great shape, so to speak. Now, great enough shape that you had to come and get food from a food pantry, a distribution. So I'm not saying they were rolling, don't get me wrong. But some, just like everybody, we have good days and we have not so good days. What we found, we had one gentleman, he had built this cart to drag behind his bicycle. And I would say he was in his late 30s, early 40s. And he would use that and go dumpster diving for cans because he had twin babies and he needed to put diapers on them. I don't know about you, but I would not be willing to go in a dumpster in July in Phoenix. That would be really hard and really humbling, right? So not a person who, in my opinion, was just willing to take everything that was given to them for granted. He was willing to work. And so we knew someone who owned one of the McDonald's near that area. So we called him and said, hey, we've got this guy, John. He needs a job. Do you have anything he could do? And he said, yeah, absolutely. Have him come in at this date, at this time. I'll meet with him. And the date and time came, and he didn't go. And so the next time we saw him, we said, John, why didn't you go? What's going on? And he kind of gave us a few excuses, and my husband didn't let that go. He just kept on with him. And he finally said, I can't read. I couldn't read the application, so I didn't go. And I have to be honest. I've seen a lot in our city, and I was absolutely shocked that a 40-year-old man couldn't read, living in Phoenix, and he then couldn't get a job, so he can't feed his family, right? So there are a lot of times that there's a situation or an incident or something that brought people to the place that they're at right now. And what we've found is that you have to come alongside them. If you want to change their life or their trajectory, you really have to befriend them. And that's going to take a lot of time and certainly a lot of prayer, but that's what does it. It's relationships that bring resources that help them even think about things in a different way instead of just having to go on their own. If they realize there's someone else there to rely on or to ask questions of or to walk with them through it, it makes a huge difference. And those are the folks that we've seen really succeed. So, You have any questions that I can answer? Anything come to mind? Yes, ma'am. I live at 16th Street in Grover's. I'm sorry if I cut you off. I'm not that good of a driver. Yes, so that's where we live. We live at 16th Street in Grover's. Probably, yeah. What time? When was it? Yeah. Our warehouse is at Cave Creek in the 101, so I usually take the access road to 16th Street and drive south, but yeah. And they just changed that light, and it's so awesome because it stays green so long. I'm so happy. The little things in life. But yes, so we're neighbors. So do you know any schools around here? So that's the PV School District, and we are partnered right now with Palomino School. And yes, still Palomino. We have about 65 kids that get a backpack there. When we first started there, there were 100, over 100 kids. So we've definitely seen a lot of stability in that community. And again, that food distribution that we started, when we started it, the first few months, there were over 300 families represented when we would show up at 6 o'clock in the morning. So these people were definitely wanting food. And then when we finally decided to end it, there were only 30 families in need. So that area has really seen a great influx of positive things, and their needs are definitely decreased. But we have one other school, Air Libre, in the PV school district, and that's closing. So it is at the end of this school year, yes. Mm-hmm. But we have had several others in PV that for a while would need our services, and then once the families were sustained, we don't continue unless they need us. And we're heavily involved in the Washington Elementary School District, which is right around in here. But we don't have any schools in Deer Valley. We did once, but didn't need our services that long. So I'll be really honest. When we extend a partnership with a school, I let them know that we rely on grants and donations. And usually those folks who hand out our food backpack, I call them a facilitator. We communicate on a regular basis. Like today, we had pickups today from our school districts, and we have one moving company that donates a truck once a month to pick up food backpacks from us and deliver them to the charter schools that don't have a truck and can't pick up. So it's a great blessing to us. This woman just is phenomenal to think outside the box. How can we help you? Oh, how about a truck, right? It's great. Forgot where I was going with that. So our facilitators, I'm back. We communicate with them and let them know that it's really serious and that really please only give a food backpack to a child that truly shows signs of needing one. And there are signs. We've all been hangry before. We know what that looks like. And in a child on a Monday morning, it's very clear. In fact, it usually is a big enough disruption to the entire class that it's a problem. It's not just that one child, that isn't getting an education. When a teacher has to devote her time to a child who does not have the physical or mental ability to control themselves because their body has not been properly fueled with nutrition, we've all been there, that teacher has to put that focus on that child and the rest of the classroom suffers. So we have found that through our food backpacks, reading scores of kids, once they get a backpack, reading scores increase by 12% and math scores increase by 26%. Children live healthier lives simply from eating food. Obviously, God created us for that. We need fuel. So they show up at school more often. They behave better in the classroom. So really, the entire class gets a better education. Our Palomino experience, but when we got there, they had a dental clinic for students in the school. They were the first school in the state of Arizona to have a dental clinic. They had a medical clinic through the NOAA that was open to the public. They had a food pantry. They had a clothing closet. They had an after-school program. They had a business alliance, a group of people around there that had come together and decided that they needed to raise the funds for a Boys and Girls Club on their school campus so that they could then have after-school programs. And the Boys and Girls Club actually took that model, and moving forward from here on out, they like to build on school campuses. So that whole thing came from the Palomino experience. But all of those things were going on, and they were a D-performing school. And we came in, and we started food backpacks in January, and in June, the principal called me. And I wasn't that good of a student, so when the principal calls me, I get very nervous. And so I went in, and she said, "Hey, come on in, sit down." She's a really nice lady. She said, "I just want to talk to you about our test scores because April is usually, I forget what it's called, but Yeah, exactly. Centralized or testing. So she said, we're not a D school anymore. We're a B plus school. And the only thing we changed was feeding kids on weekends. That was the one missing link that we needed. And now it's all changed. So a lot of change in that particular area. But we have a lot of charter schools around. Like I said, Camelback is one of our larger ones. We partner with a lot of the Imagine charter schools throughout the valley. But we're as far west as Litchfield Park, I think. So some food backpack programs, we're obviously not the only one. Some have a specific geographic region they're willing to work with, or only a school district, like Desert Mission Food Bank. They only work with Washington or Deer Valley. So if we get a request from one of those schools, the first thing we do is try to make that introduction, because we don't have any geographic limits, so we can go anywhere. So why would we serve a school when someone else might be able to do it? That's kind of taking food out of children's mouths, so to speak, in our opinion. So we try to make that relationship happen. And if it doesn't, then we start serving them until they can. And then if not, we go out further. So, yes, ma'am. Yes, actually, for us to share that with our Camelback School would be awesome. And I don't know if you're looking for projects or things to volunteer with, but I'd be happy to make an introduction to that school. They've been phenomenal, and I know that they have needs. Even something as simple as most of our Imagine schools have come in and read to the class for a day. There's National Reading Day. I've done that before, and it's a hoot, I'll tell you. Really. Yes, ma'am. Sure. So schools apply for our program with our with an application. We have in the past had a waiting list. One time we had, I think, 6 schools on the waiting list for 2 years before we were able to find the funds to meet their needs. But right now we don't have anyone on our list, so we're very excited about that. But volunteers, we have a warehouse in Northeast Phoenix at the 101 in Cave Creek, and we bring in groups of 25-ish to 30, and it's about an hour and a half process, and they basically pack the food backpacks. Now, when I say backpack, I know you're all thinking this right here. If you could think about a plastic bag, like from the grocery store, that's what we pack in. We can't possibly have enough 2,000 and keep them rotating through our schools. And most kids already have a food backpack, so it's a little, already have a backpack, so it's a little odd if they have a second one or if they all have some that look the same, because in the beginning we did provide backpacks and those kids were made fun of. There was peer pressure, so they decided not to be in the program. So we very quickly learned that's something you don't do. So we pack in plastic bags, and it's kind of an assembly line. We take donations of plastic bags. So if you are like me and you have way more than you need, we'd be happy to take them for you. Our warehouse is an end unit, and we have a back area that's gated. So if we're not there, you can always just throw them over the fence. We'd like it if you'd just put them in one big bag instead of individually throwing them over the fence. but anyway, did that answer the questions? Yes. Okay. Yes, ma'am. Yes, absolutely. You know what? I have some flyers up here, and the website's on there, and I also have cards with the address. So, yeah, it's Mohawk is a really small street, very first street north of the freeway at Cave Creek, and we're 2650 East Mohawk. So, yes. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I don't know. No, When Helping Hurts is a book, but it's not, that's by Bryant Finkert. That is not the same book. And Ruby Payne, P-A, yeah. Yes, it is. Framework for Understanding Poverty by Ruby Payne. Yes, definitely both of those books are totally worth the read. No, I'm sure not. I think it's been an ongoing problem. When I was in second grade, one for like a 4-month period. I'm not sure why my family moved to Topeka, Kansas. And, two things struck me as very strange about that. First, everyone at school got breakfast when you got to school, which I had never seen before. And we all ate in the classroom. And the second thing was, tornado drills. In Phoenix, we don't have those. So get under the desk. And I'm like, what? Why would I want the desk to fall on me? Is that a good thing? But anyway, but yeah, so I graduated from high school in 87. So it was definitely in the 80s, kind of thing. But yeah, I think it's been an ongoing problem for a while. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, it's $1.40 as an allowance for those meals for breakfast or lunch. And, it's the same for SNAP benefits in nationally speaking. So SNAP is food stamps. So it's about $1.40 per meal per person. And once you get to a certain number of people in your family, then it's not even that amount. So I don't know how much you know about that or want to know about that. I think sometimes, food stamps or SNAP get a bad rap, because those EBT cards, we sometimes see them at, fast food restaurants. And in all honesty, those are programmed based on your situation. Homeless people can get those. They can go and use them at a fast food place. But as a single mom, I can't. In fact, as a single mom, I can't even buy one of those roasted chickens at the grocery store. I can buy a raw one and cook it myself, but I can't buy that. So yeah, so I'm sure there's always abuse with every system, but at the same time, there are also some interesting factors to it. So anything else? Yes, ma'am. Yes. 10 and up. Yes. And the reason for that is, again, we started this partly because we wanted our daughter to be, to experience volunteerism. And I would play that up all the time. And I'm pretty sure you will too when it's your opportunity to come. And so two things we want, we don't overbook. A lot of places will book 2 or 3 times as many people as they need because a lot of times they fall off. We have been very blessed and that's not necessarily the case. So we feel like if you've been talking it up this whole time, when you get there, you and your child need to feel like you have played a vital role in today's activities. So it's really important for that. And then also everything we do is up on tables. And so the issue is more height than it is age. So if you have a tall 7-year-old, I'm good with that. I don't card anyone, so it works great. But again, we just want everyone to have a really, we want that to be the best possible, especially first volunteer experience that they can.
So this is at your warehouse?
Yes. No, well, so volunteers come to our warehouse. School districts come and pick up the bags once they're packed and take them to the schools. So students come into the nurse's office or a particular teacher who's running the program on a Friday, and they get that bag dropped in their backpack, zipped. They go on their way, and they eat the food over the weekend. And then they usually receive breakfast and lunch at school Monday through Friday. So they're usually on that program. Yes, ma'am. That is an individual application, not necessarily just rote. Any school gets that, so they have to apply for that. So it's case by case. If they feel like they need it, then yes. Not even all of our public schools get it, unless they feel they have a certain percentage. So Title I is unfortunately a term for low-income schools. So 40% of your population or more qualifies for the free and reduced breakfast and lunch program. That is how you become a Title I school. So if you ever hear that, you'll know what that means. And in order to qualify for the breakfast and lunch program, you actually have to show your tax returns to prove that.
So
40% or more. The qualifying line there is 40%. No, not necessarily. No, it depends on what that percentage number is and how much they've applied for. Any other questions? It's been a pleasure being here. I don't get to visit many groups like this, and it was awesome to be part of your prayer, and I will be praying for sure. Thank you so much for having me. I have some flyers. Oh, you know what? I do have one more thing. We, Kitchen on the Street is in the running for a grant from the Greater Phoenix Chamber of Commerce, and we need your votes online. It's one vote per email address, not one of these every day for 6 months kind of things. So I have some flyers. One side is the award, And the other side is the family dinner table. So if I could give those to you, that would be great. And then also I have some flyers if you're interested in the address. If you want to bring your bags by, we would love that. But thank you so much.
We will make sure that all of these little things get to both of our small groups so that we can all have all the information we need. But thank you, Lisa, for coming, as usual.